Apollo, I said. It's where he was born. It's a town on Leyte, Philippine Islands. The hospital was converted from an old cathedral. I had malaria shots there when I was 7. He went quiet for a mile, like he was paying his respects. I called Treasury a year ago, he said. I didn't know who else to call. Couldn't call the police because of Morrison. Couldn't call the FBI because of Picard. So I called Washington and tipped off this guy who called himself Apollo. He was a smart guy. I thought he'd get away with it. I knew his best chance was to strike while they were stockpiling, while there was evidence in there. I saw a sign for gas and took a last-minute decision to pull off. Hubble filled the tank. I found a plastic bottle in a trash can and got him to fill that, too. What's that for? He asked me. I shrugged at him. Emergencies? I said. He didn't come back on that. We just paid at the window and pulled back onto the highway. Carried on driving south. We were a half hour from Margrave. It was approaching midnight. So what made you take off on Monday? I asked him. Kleiner called me, he said. He told me to stay home. He said two guys would be coming by. I asked him why, and he said there was a problem at the Florida end and I had to go sort it out. But, I said, I didn't believe him, he said. Soon as he mentioned two guys, it flashed into my mind what had happened down in Jacksonville that first week. I panicked. I called the taxi and ran. You did good, Hubble, I said. You saved your life. You know what, he said. I glanced a question at him. If he'd said one guy, I wouldn't have noticed, he said. You know, if he'd said, stay home, a guy is coming by, I'd have fallen for it. But he said, two guys. He made a mistake, I said. I know, Hubble said. I can't believe it. He never makes mistakes. I shook my head, smiled in the dark. He made a mistake last Thursday. The big chrome clock on the Bentley's dash said midnight. I needed this whole deal over and done by 5 in the morning, so I had 5 hours. If all went well, that was way more than I needed. If I screwed up, it didn't matter if I had 5 hours, or 5 days, or 5 years. This was a once-only thing, in and out. In the service, we used to say, do it once, and do it right. Tonight, I was going to add, and do it quickly. Hubble, I said, I need your help. He roused himself and looked over at me. How? He asked. I spent the last 10 minutes of the highway cruise going over it, over and over it, until he was totally solid. I swung off the highway where it met the county road, blasted past the warehouses and on down the 14 miles to town, slowed as I passed the station house. It was quiet, lights off, no cars in the lot. The firehouse next door looked okay. The town was silent and deserted. The only light showing in the whole place was in the barber shop. I made the right onto Beckman and drove up the rise to Hubble's place. Turned in at the familiar white mailbox and spun the wheel through the curves up the driveway. Pulled up at the door. My car keys are in the house, Hubble said. It's open, I said. He went to check it out. Pushed at the splintered door gingerly, with one finger like it might be booby-trapped. I saw him go in. A minute later, he was back out. He had his keys, but he didn't walk round to the garage. He came back over to me and leaned into the car. It's a hell of a mess in there, he said. What's been going on? I used this place for an ambush, I said. 4 guys were tramping all over the place looking for me. It was raining at the time. He leaned down and looked in at me. Were they the ones? He said. You know, the ones Kleiner would have sent if I'd talked. I nodded. They had all their gear with them, I said. I could see his face in the dim glow from the old dials on the dash. His eyes were wide open, but he wasn't seeing me. He was seeing what he'd seen in his nightmares. He nodded slowly, then he reached in and put his hand on my arm, squeezed it, didn't speak. Then he ducked back out and was gone. I was left sitting there, wondering how the hell I'd ever hated the guy a week ago. I used the time to reload the Desert Eagle. I replaced the four shells I'd used out there on the highway near Augusta. Then I saw Hubble drive his old green Bentley around from the garage. The engine was cold and he was trailing a cloud of white vapor. He gave me a thumbs up as he passed, and I followed the white cloud down the driveway and down Beckman. We passed by the church and turned left onto Main Street in stately procession. Two fine old cars, nose to tail through the sleeping town, ready to do battle. Hubble pulled up 40 yards shy of the station house, pulled in to the curb just where I'd told him to, killed his lights and waited, motor running. I wafted past him and nosed into the police department lot, parked up in the end slot and got out. Left all four doors unlocked, pulled the big automatic out of my pocket. The night air was cold and the silence was crushing. I could hear Hubble's motor idling from 40 yards away. I unlatched the Desert Eagle safety and the click sounded deafening in the stillness. I ran to the station house wall and dropped to the ground, slid forward until I could see in through the bottom of the heavy glass door, watched and listened, held my breath. I watched and listened long enough to be sure. I stood up and clicked the safety back on, put the gun back in my pocket, stood there and made a calculation. The firehouse and the station house stood together 300 yards from the north end of Main Street. Further on up the road, Eno's was 800 yards away. I figured the earliest anybody could get to us would be maybe 3 minutes. 2 minutes to react, and a minute for a fast jog up from Main Street. So we had 3 minutes. Have that for a margin of safety. Call it 90 seconds, beginning to end. I ran out to the middle of the county road and waved a signal to Hubble. I saw his car pull away from the curb, and I ran over to the firehouse entrance, stood to the side of the big red door, and waited. Hubble drove up and slewed his old Bentley in a tight turn across the road, ended up at a right angle just about lined up with the firehouse entrance, facing away from me. I saw the car lurch as he slammed the shift in reverse, then he hit the gas and the big old sedan shot backward toward me. It accelerated all the way and smashed backward into the firehouse door. That old Bentley must have weighed 2 tons, and it tore the metal door right off its mountings with no trouble at all. There was a tremendous crashing and tearing of metal, and I heard the rear light smash and the clang of the fender as it fell off and bounced on the concrete. I was through the gap between the door and the frame before Hubble slammed into drive and dragged clear of the wreckage. It was dark in there, but I found what I was looking for. It was clipped to the side of the fire truck, horizontally, at head height. A bolt cutter, a huge thing, must have been 4 feet long. I wrenched it out of its mountings and ran for the door. Soon as Hubble saw me come out, he pulled a wide circle across the road. The back end of his Bentley was wrecked. The trunk lid was flapping and the sheet metal was crunched and screeching. But he did his job. He made the wide turn and lined up with the station house entrance. Paused for a second and floored the gas. Accelerated straight towards the heavy glass doors. This time, head on. The old Bentley smashed through the doors in a shower of glass and demolished the reception desk, plowed on into the squad room and stopped. I ran in right behind it. Finley was standing in the middle cell, frozen in shock. He was handcuffed by his left wrist to the bars, separating him from the end cell, well to the back. Couldn't have been better. I tore and shoved at the wreckage of the reception counter and cleared a path behind Hubble, waved him back. He spun the wheel and reversed into the space I'd cleared. I hauled and shoved the squad room desks out of the way to give him a clear run in front. Turned and gave him the signal. The front end of his car was as bad as the back. The hood was buckled and the radiator was smashed. Green water was pouring out of the bottom and steam was hissing out of the top. The headlights were smashed and the fender was rubbing the tire, but Hubble was doing his job. He was holding the car on the brake and speeding the motor, just like I'd told him to. I could see the car shuddering against the brake. Then it shot forward and hurtled toward Finley in the middle cell, smashed into the titanium bars at an angle and ripped them open like a swung axe on a picket fence. The Bentley's hood flew open and the windshield exploded. Torn metal clanged and screeched. Hubble came to a stop a yard short of where Finley was standing. The wrecked car settled in a loud hiss of steam. The air was thick with dust. I dived through the gap into the cell and clamped the bolt cutter on the link fixing Finley's wrist to the bars, leaned on the 4-foot levers until the handcuffs sheared through. I gave Finley the bolt cutter and hauled him through the gap and out of the cell. Hubble was climbing out of the Bentley's window. The impact had distorted the door, and it wouldn't open. I pulled him out and leaned in and yanked the keys. Then we all three ran through the shattered squad room and crunched over the shards of plate glass where the big doors had been. Ran over to the car and dove in. I started it up and howled backward out of the lot, slammed into drive, and took off down the road toward town. Finley was out. 90 seconds, beginning to end. Chapter 32. I slowed down at the north end of Main Street and rolled gently south through the sleeping town. Nobody spoke. Hubble was lying on the rear seat, shaken up. Finley was beside me in the front passenger seat, just sitting there, rigid, staring out through the windshield. We were all breathing heavily. We were all in that quiet zone which follows an intense blast of danger. The clock on the dash showed 1 in the morning. I wanted to hole up until 4. I had a superstitious thing about 4 o'clock in the morning. We used to call it KGB time. Story was, it was the time they chose to go knocking on doors. 4 o'clock in the morning. Story was, it had always worked well for them. Their victims were at a low ebb at that hour. Progress was easy. We had tried it ourselves, time to time. It had always worked well for me. So I wanted to wait until 4. One last time. I jinked the car, left and right, down the service alleys behind the last block of stores, switched the running lights off, and pulled up in the dark behind the barber shop. Killed the motor. Finley glanced around and shrugged. Going to the barber at 1 in the morning was no more crazy than driving a $100,000 Bentley into a building, no more crazy than getting locked in a cell for 10 hours by a madman. After 20 years in Boston and 6 months in Margrave, there wasn't a whole lot left that Finley was ever going to raise an eyebrow at. Hubble leaned forward from the back seat. He was pretty shaken up. He'd deliberately driven into 3 separate crashes. The 3 impacts had left him battered and jarred and drained. It had taken a lot to keep his foot jammed down on the gas, heading for one solid object after another, but he'd done it. Not everybody would have, but he was suffering for it now. I slid out of the seat and stood in the alley. Gestured Hubble out of the car. He joined me in the dark, stood there a bit unsteady. "You okay?" I asked him. He shrugged. "I guess," he said. "I banged my knee and my neck hurts like hell." "Walk up and down," I said. "Don't stiffen up." I walked him up and down the dark alley, 10 paces up and back a couple of times. He was pecking his stride on the left. Maybe the door had caved in and hit his left knee. He was rolling his head around, loosening the jarred muscles in his neck. "Okay," I said. He smiled, changed it to a grimace as a tendon graunched. "I live," he said. Finley got out and joined us in the alley. He was coming round. He was stretching like he was waking up, getting excited. He smiled at me in the dark. "Good job, Reacher," he said. "I was wondering how the hell you were going to get me out. What happened to Picard?" I made a gun with my fingers, like a child's mime. He nodded a sort of partner's nod to me, too reserved to go any further. I shook his hand. Seemed like the right thing to do. Then I turned and rapped softly on the service door at the back of the barber shop. It opened up straight away. The older guy was standing there like he'd been waiting for us to knock. He held the door like some kind of an old butler, gestured us in. We trooped single file down a passage into a storeroom. Waited next to shelves piled high with barber stuff. The gnarled old man caught up to us. "We need your help," I said. The old guy shrugged. He held up his mahogany palm in a wait gesture, shuffled through to the front and came back with his partner, the younger old guy. They discussed my request in loud, rasping whispers. "Upstairs," the younger guy said. We filed up a narrow staircase, came out in an apartment above the shop. The 2 old barbers showed us through to the living room. They pulled the blinds and switched on a couple of dim lamps, waved us to sit. The room was small and threadbare, but clean. It had a cozy feel. I figured if I had a room, I'd want it to look like that. We sat down. The younger guy sat with us, and the older guy shuffled out again, closed the door. The four of us sat there looking at each other. Then the barber leaned forward. "You boys ain't the first to hide out with us," he said. Finley glanced around, appointed himself spokesman. "We're not," he said. "No, sir, you're not," the barber said. "We've had lots of boys hiding out with us. And girls, too, tell the truth."
"Like who?" Finley asked.
"You name it, we had it," the old guy said. "We've had farm workers' union boys from the peanut farms. We've had farm workers' union boys from the peach growers. We've had civil rights girls from the voter registration. We've had boys who didn't want their ass sent to Vietnam. You name it, we had it."